trying to keep it simple today. Page 8, Genesis chapter 12. So let me just do a brief recap, because for the last couple of weeks, if you haven't had a chance to be with us, we've been exploring what I would call a pretty remarkable interaction between God and a pretty ordinary, simple guy by the name of Abram. Here's basically summed up what happened. So out of nowhere, pretty much, God interrupts Abram's comfy, cozy life by offering him what I consider to be a crazy invitation. And that crazy invitation goes a little bit like this. Okay, Abram, here's the deal. I want you to leave everything you've ever known and everyone you've ever known, except for your wife, she gets to come along, and follow me out into the darkness, out into the wilderness. But don't worry, Abram. Eventually, I'll actually show you where to go. Just start going. And here's the deal. Don't worry, Abram. If you decide to take this flying leap off the cliff with me, then here's something I want you to know. You can count on me to bless you, okay? I'm going to make a great nation from you. I'm going to give you a great name. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to protect you. And here's the crazy thing, Abram. If you go on this journey with me, if you just step out and take this big risk, here's what's going to happen. You are going to impact every single family on the earth. You're going to change the world. And he comes to Abram with this crazy deal, this crazy offer, and he says, that's the deal, Abram, so take it or leave it. And if you follow along in the story, the crazy thing is that Abram decides to take the deal. He launches away from his home, from the cozy and the familiar, out into what is uncertain and unknown, and he does it as a ginormous step or leap of faith. And at first, everything seems to be going really well. Pick up his story with me, if you would, on page 9. Sorry, I was slightly off there. Page 9, verse 4, the very top left corner of your page there. It says, so Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot, that's his nephew, went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. We'll come back to that later. Verse 5, and Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. When they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to a place at Shechem to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, check this out, to your offspring, I will give this land. In other words, God shows up after Abram gets to Canaan and is like, oh, by the way, this is the place I was telling you I was going to send you to. You made it. You're in the right place. You made it to what I would call the promised land. Woohoo! And then we have verse 7. So Abram built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. That makes sense, right? God shows up. You want to remember it somehow. Let's build this altar so I'll always remember that God showed up here and said, this is the land I wanted you to go to. Verse 8, from there he moved up to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord, and he called upon the name of the Lord, and Abram journeyed on, still going toward the Negev. So you get this idea. Abram is wandering through the land. He's here for a while. He builds an altar and cries out to God. He goes here for a while. He builds another altar, cries out to God. This is a guy who's sort of feeling it out as it's happening, and so far, everything seems to be going according to plan. And I wonder if Abram is thinking, for however long this takes, maybe I made the right choice. Like when I stepped off that cliff and took God's hand and just went out into the darkness, didn't know where I was going, maybe it's all gonna turn out all right. And then, of course, we have a problem. Take a look at verse 10. Now, there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. So Abram's wandering around, everything's great, and then of course the land God sent him to has a problem. And what's the problem? There's no food there, which is a little bit of a problem, right? But it's not just that they ran out of, you know, bread on the aisle at Walmart and got to wait till the truck comes in on Tuesday or whatever. This is a problem because there's no rain. If there's no rain, that means no crops are being grown. And therefore, not just do you not have anybody, you got to wait till next Tuesday, there's no food on the horizon for Abram and his family. Now, he just took a big risk, right? Like, he just stepped off a cliff, and God said, don't worry, Abram, I'll take care of you. And now the very place that he shows up has problems and a famine, and he can't even feed his family? Like, remember, there's no safety net from the government. There's no office you can go to supply you with some temporary emergency food. There is no Red Cross to help you out. You are completely on your own. Your family, your life is on the line. This is not a speed bump. This is an absolute life and death situation. I mean, think about it from Abram's perspective. God, you made me all these promises. How am I going to be a great nation if I'm dead because I can't get any food? Now, we don't know exactly what Abram was thinking, but here's what happens inside of Toby's head whenever an unexpected crisis enters into my world. And if you're following along in the blanks in your notes that are in the bulletin, here's the first one if you want to fill it in. Crises, that's my kids asked me if I knew that was misspelled, that crisis is spelled C-R-I-S-I-S. I'm like, yes, kids. More than one crisis, though, are crises. So C-R-I-S-E-S. And just for all of you grammar Nazis out there, I wanted to get that out. So you guys know I'm spelling it right, okay? Whenever crises come into my life, crises make me question everything I thought I knew about God and life and myself. A crisis hits my world and I do something like this. I say, God, I thought we had a deal. I thought that if I would just step out in faith and go on this journey with you, you promised you were going to take care of me. So what's going on? God, what are you doing? What about all these promises you talk about? And then when I get really panicky, I say things like, don't you love me? Don't you care what's happening to me? Don't you have the power, or at least you say you have the power, to keep your promises? Is it maybe you don't have that power after all? I get kind of worked up and I end up with a question like this. How could you let this happen? This isn't supposed to happen. I did the right thing. I'm following you in faith. How could there be a crisis? And that eventually leads to what I would consider to be the biggest question of all. I ask myself, did I make a mistake choosing to step out and trust you? Now that there's a crisis in my life, can I really count on you to come through for me? Or am I kind of back to square one? Now, I don't know about you, but I really don't like asking those kind of questions because they make me feel incredibly vulnerable and a little bit scared. And when I feel vulnerable and scared, I do the same thing that Abram does right here in our text. And if you're following along in your blanks, here's the second one to fill in. I often react to crisis by going into what I call survival mode. Survival mode. So a crisis hits my world, my questions are all up in my face, my life feels turned upside down, and so I inevitably switch into what I call survival mode. Now, let's notice what that looks like in Abram's life before we explore what it means to us. Verse 11 says this, when he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance. Now, ladies, word of advice, if your husband or somebody comes to you and starts with that line, you should be a little bit suspicious about what's on the back end of that, all right? Because here's on the back end of this. I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. Verse 14, when Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Now, that doesn't mean she was invited in for a snack. Come have some tea with me. No, 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 no. She was forcibly taken from her family and put into Pharaoh's harem as one of his concubines or co-wives, okay? And for her sake, look at verse 16. Pharaoh dealt well with Abram, and Abram had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. Now that's quite a story, right? I mean, if you look at it from one angle, survival mode never looked so good as what you see in this passage. Abraham doesn't just survive this experience, escape the crisis with his life. He makes out like a bandit. Verse 16 tells us all the loot he gets because of this little teeny tiny deception that he decided to do while he was in survival mode. Now, how did he get to that point where Pharaoh is giving him all kinds of stuff and he's getting rich off of his deception? Here's number one. Here's how this works. Here's how survival mode works. Number one, Abram took charge. If you want to say control, that's a fine way to say it as well. He took charge and developed his very own survival plan. So basically what Abram does is this crisis enters his life and he decides to take charge of his itinerary. Right? God is the one that said, I want you to go to the land that I'll tell you where to go. And he makes it there and God says, this is the place. You made it. Now wander around inside of here and be where I sent you to go. What does Abram do immediately in verse 10 when there's a famine? Verse 10. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there. He's like, no, I'm out of here. I'm out of Dodge. Dodge has no food. I need food. Egypt is the place to get food. That's where I'm going, God. I know you want me to stay in Canaan. That's the promised land. But I know where the food is, and I'm going where the food is. But Abram also is clever enough to know that Abram is in a difficult situation because he knows that the danger of his wife being taken and him killed is a real danger. That could really actually happen to him. But he's clever, so he's found a way around it. And instead of being Sarai's husband, he's going to play the part of the older brother. Because in that scenario, the guy who wants the girl goes to the older brother or to the father and makes a deal. Okay, I'm going to take her off your hands, and here's what I'm going to give you in exchange. Now, that sounds very harsh, but that's the way life worked back in those days. And Abram knows, if I come across as the older brother, I get to have an advantage out of this situation. I get to like make hay while the sun shines, right? Like I get to come out of this ahead of the game. And all I got to do along the way is just let go of a couple of things like morality and my wife. You know, no big deal, right? It's all about self-preservation for Abram. Did you notice that? He says, they'll kill me and let you live, so why don't you just go live with Pharaoh, and that way I'll live. All he cares about in that moment is his self-preservation. And then he cares about his self-advancement. He's like, he'll deal well with me because of you. I might actually come ahead on this. And he looks at Sarai and he says, Sarai, this is how we're going to survive, sweetheart. We're going to survive by doing this. God let this crisis happen. If God really was going to take care of us, he either wouldn't give us the crisis or he'd show up and tell us how to deal with the crisis. But since God isn't saying anything, I guess we got to take care of ourselves. So here, sweetheart, here's how we're going to get through this. Here's how we're going to survive. I'm going to come up with a plan to take care of myself. Now, I don't know about you, but I am super good at this. I am really, really good at making plans to take care of myself when I think God isn't aware of my needs. I sometimes wonder if God's paying attention. I sometimes wonder if God is qualified to be in charge of my well-being at all. I mean, think about it. Who knows better how to take care of me than me? I was taking care of me long before I ever stepped out in faith and gave my life over to God. I know what I'm doing. And I'm also very skilled at coming up with a plan to find a way to get what I want without having to depend on God to come through for me. Whether it's food, whether it's pleasure, whether it's security, stuff, relationships, whatever. I've got a great way to come up with plans. So I basically say to God, God, if you're going to disappoint me, if you're not going to come through for me, if you're not going to provide for me, well, fine. I'll just take charge and I'll take care of me. I've been doing it my whole life. I'm going to keep doing it. And that is what I would call the survival mode in a nutshell. And we all do it. We all do it whenever we feel that God's not doing a good enough job of taking care of me. We go into survival mode. And maybe later on we'll go back. But for now, to get through the crisis, this is what we have to do. Now, here's the dirty little secret, though, about survival mode. You ready for this? Here's the second part. You can fill in the blanks if you want to. When we're in survival mode, we sacrifice whatever is necessary to survive. We'll sacrifice whatever we have to sacrifice in order to, quote unquote, survive. Did you notice the things that Abram sacrifices in this really brief part of the story? Sure, he gets all the camels and male and female servants and donkeys that he could ever want. He's rich and wealthy beyond his wildest dreams. But you know what he gave up? He gave up his relationship with Sarah. He gave up his relationship with his wife. He totally threw her under the bus. You realize, right, that he's basically saying, Pharaoh, you can take her as your wife. He offered up his wife as a gift to this powerful man in order to get in good with him and save his own neck. But not only that, he's also sacrificing his future. God has said to him, hey, Abram, you and Sarai are going to have a miracle baby. And that miracle baby is going to have other miracle babies. And soon you're going to have a whole nation of people that say, Abram is my daddy. By giving your wife to Pharaoh, you know what you're choosing? You're choosing to eliminate your own future. You don't have a wife to have a child with anymore, to have a big family with. You're sacrificing your future. And so Abram is right back to where he was before he stepped out in faith, with no children and no future and nothing to look forward to in his life. And lastly, he sacrificed his agreement with God. He sacrificed his relationship with God. He was willing to let go of all of God's promises. He was ready to ignore all of his responsibilities to God, all so he could survive this crisis. Now, I want to tell you something truthful if I can. Survival mode, I will say this. Survival mode often works in the short term. In other words, usually you can find a way to manipulate circumstances in life to get what you want in the moment, to survive. But in the process, I've got to tell you something. You are always going to sacrifice more than you thought you would have to get that survival. And then when you get on the other side and you get the survival, you realize that maybe surviving isn't a good enough goal for my life. Just making it through the crisis maybe is not what I should be aiming for. Jesus asked this thought-provoking question one time. Give me the slide, guys, because I lost I left it down there. Give me the slide. Jesus asked this really thought-provoking question one time. He says, what does it profit a man, and in case, ladies, you think you're off the hook, sorry, what does it profit a person to gain the whole world and forfeit his or her soul? Have you ever stopped and thought about that? That it is possible, in fact, Jesus says it's likely that you can gain the world. You can get what you want. You can get whatever is on that list of things that you need for survival's sake. You can get it, but you can get it at the expense of something eternal that you can't buy back. You cannot trade your soul for something else later. When you realize it's your soul that you want, you're not going to be able to trade the money you gave it up for your soul again. You've given that up. It's gone. Jesus said, wouldn't it be better when you're faced with a crisis to make it through that crisis with your soul still intact? When we make the trade of survival for our soul, for our values, for our convictions, for who we are on the inside. When you trade that so that I can survive or get ahead or fill in the blank, you are always going to lose. You're going to lose. And then the very thing that you fought for, and this is the really sad part, right? Once you finally grab it, and you're like, yes, I have this thing. I have survival. I have happiness. I have a spouse. I have a child. I have a job. I have a career. I have a bank account. I have a retirement account. Whatever it is. You grab it and it turns into soap bubbles in your hands and it just disappears. And you're like, what was so great about doing that? And what did I have to sacrifice and trade to get that thing? So survival mode, friends, is dangerous and it's devastating, but it's very, very common for us humans. Because waiting for God to come through for us Suffering, going without for a while, waiting for him to show up is super hard. But I'll tell you what, taking charge of your own life and doing whatever you have to do to survive actually is going to make everything a lot worse. Now, verse 16 ends with Abram wealthy but with no wife, right? Do you realize that the entire Bible could have stopped right there? Now, maybe God in his grace would have started over with somebody else. But the truth is, Abram's part in the story could have ended right here, and yet it doesn't, does it? There's more to the story. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a series, we'd have a sermon, right? There's a whole series still to come because God is not done with Abram. God is not going to let Abram go into survival mode and ruin everything. In fact, God is going to show up in this story. And when he does, he's going to show Abram a little bit more about who he is. Because here's what I really believe that is Abram's problem. And I think it's our problem too sometimes. Abram does what he does. He goes into survival mode because he doesn't really understand who God is very well yet. He still doesn't really know who he's dealing with. He doesn't have a deep knowledge and trust built up over a long time. He's still new to this whole thing. And so he makes dumb choices because he doesn't really know who God is. So what God is going to do is intervene in Abram's story and in the process, show Abram who he is better. And in that process, I think we can also learn who is God to this failed survival mode guy. What does this survival mode guy learn about God when he fails? And I think that will help us as well, because we all go into survival mode from time to time. So very briefly, and I know I'm watching the time, don't worry. I know we got to get out of here. I know our kids' town people are like, we got to watch the time. So here's the thing. Really quick, I want to share with you. Here's four things that Abram learns about God in the rest of this story. Let's read verse 17, and then we'll give you the first one. Verse 17 says this, "But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife." Do you know what God decides to do? He basically invalidates Abram's choice. Abram basically hands over the wife and says, sorry, no miracle, baby. I guess that's not going to work out for us. Here you go. He basically says, Abram, dumb choice. I'm not going to let you make this dumb choice. And God steps in and he starts to put plagues. I don't know what kind of plagues, probably some kind of horrible disaster on Pharaoh and his family until he realizes, don't touch Sarai. Don't put your filthy hands on her. She belongs to somebody else. She's important. She matters. God steps in and he protects Sarai when her own husband had turned her over to the wolves. What do we learn about God? Number one, we learn this. God is unconditionally faithful. God is faithful. You know what? When God made his promise to Abram, he didn't have his fingers crossed behind his back. He didn't say, hey, Abram, if you're perfect, then I'll be perfect in response. If you do this nice thing, then I'll do this nice thing. God made promises, and God doesn't change his mind based on my behavior. He doesn't change his mind about what he promised to do based on how well you're doing keeping your promises to him. He doesn't allow your actions to determine how he treats you. So if he's determined to bless you, he's going to bless you even if you do everything possible to keep him from blessing you. He's going to stay faithful to you and love you and stay involved in your life even though you deserve to have him turn his back and walk away. Friends, you need to understand this about God. Abram had God intervene in his life. He didn't even ask God to intervene, and God intervened and said, no. I've got a promise I made to you. I'm going to make you a great nation, and I'm not going to let you ruin it because you're horrible at keeping your promises to me. I don't know if you've ever broken a promise you've made to God. You probably have. I think I've done it like a billion times. You know what's really good for me to know and for you to know? He doesn't decide how he's going to treat you based on how well you're treating him. He sticks with what he says he was going to do. God doesn't just say stuff because he wants to hear himself talk. When he speaks, he binds himself to his own word. And it almost doesn't matter what you do at that point. He's going to do what he said he was going to do. He's faithful, unconditionally faithful. Secondly, I want to show you this. Take a look at verse 20. Skip ahead for a minute to verse 20. says this, "And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning Abram, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev." Now, verse 2, "Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold." How is it that he screwed up and he comes back with his life, his wife, and a whole bunch of extra stuff that he never had any right to? And God just lets him do it. God actually, Abram is better off at the end of this story than he is at the beginning of this story. Why? Number 2, here's what God reveals about himself. God is a God of grace. God is a God of grace. Now, for those of you that don't know what that means, it's this. God gives you gifts you don't deserve. He's kind to you when you deserve unkindness. He's gentle when you deserve harshness. It's who he is. He gives it to us when we don't deserve it. He doesn't wait for us to measure up to the standard and then he'll be nice to you. He chooses to give you gifts before you deserve it. Jesus didn't die for us once we had gotten our act together and proved we were worthy of it. Jesus died when we were his enemy. When we were the Nazi guard putting bullets in the back of defenseless women and children during World War II, he died for us then. He died for us when we were at our worst moments, your very worst moments. He loved you then. This is who he is. Because of God, I don't ever get what I deserve. I actually get a gift way greater than I ever have deserved. Because of God's grace, you don't have to be controlled by guilt. You don't have to be controlled by fear. You can actually just rest and relax in God's arms, knowing that he is good and that his intentions towards you are good. But I want to just flip the script really quick on you with number 3. Because God also, number 3, knows how to humble our pride. How to humble our pride. Take a look at verse 18, the verses I skipped over. So verse 17, "The Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, 'What is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go.'" Friends, God doesn't allow Abram to walk away from this situation thinking that he did the right thing and that he behaved well. God uses a pagan king to rebuke and humble Abram and basically say, "What were you thinking?" Like, if God could put his words in the mouth of a pagan king, these are the words that it would have been. God's saying to Abram, "What was in your head? Why did you do this? Why did you lie? Why didn't you trust me?" Abram basically leaves there with his life, with his tail between his legs, humbled in his pride. Now, I've had this happen to me. I don't know if you've ever had it happen to you. I'm speaking at a tone that communicates a certain amount of anger to somebody in my family. And my 3-year-old looks at me and says, "No yell, Daddy." And then he goes to his brother, "Daddy yelling, Daddy yelling." You know what that does? It takes me off my high horse and points out to me what I actually did. And I feel this little. I played high school baseball for a year. Actually, what I should say is I made a high school baseball team. I had three at-bats all season, and I never played in the field for one half inning. And I couldn't figure it out for the longest time, but I had friends on the team, and so it was a fun team thing, and so I just kept doing it. I didn't quit. I just kept going, figured maybe at some point somebody will have a leg fall off, and maybe they'll let me play. My coach was an unbeliever, and I'll never forget, I couldn't understand why he wouldn't let me play, and I got really frustrated about it. Well, one day, towards the end of the season, and one of my friends got struck out by the opposing pitcher, and the opposing pitcher, as he went off, kind of took his hat off and on his way to the thing. And I was mad. That was unfair. That's bad sportsmanship. You don't do that to my friend, right? Well, my friend who got struck out was the pitcher, and then he got his opportunity. He struck out that guy. So what do I do? I'm not playing. So I can't contribute to the game that way. So I lean my head out the dugout and say, "Hey, Matt, why don't you take off your cap and wave to him now?" Let's just say that my coach was not too thrilled with my contributions. Here's an unsaved man who I don't know had a lot of integrity just because of my observations of him over the season. He looked at me and he said, "Locke, the only reason I have you on this team is to be a good influence on my players. And that's what you're going to do? Sit down and shut up." Now, I'll tell you this. I deserved every word that he said to me. Boy, God brought me low. So that's why I'm on this team, to be an influence to people. Oh yeah, that's right. That's sort of like my mission from God, not just to get hits and run around the bases. Like, that's what baseball is about. No, baseball is about lifting up Jesus, and I just embarrassed Jesus in front of all these people. You better believe I was encouraging my teammates. You better believe that I was changing my tune, and my pride was humbled. Show that other passage, guys, James 4:6. He gives more grace. Therefore, it says God opposes who? The proud, but he gives grace to the humble. I think Abram was humbled by this pagan king saying, "What are you thinking, man? We could have done this a different way." So the fact that God gives grace doesn't mean he never rebukes you. Doesn't mean he gives you this blank check to be stupid and selfish and yeah, you win. No. He looks you in the face and he says, "I'm not going to cut off my relationship from you, but I'm going to look you in the eye and say, what a stupid thing to do. What an unkind thing to do. Why would you do that?" If you've ever had God get right up to your nose and talk to you the way my coach talked to me in that moment, you are experiencing a God who knows how to humble your pride. And a God who does it, though, from a position of love and grace. And notice this last piece of the puzzle. Look at verse 2 again of chapter 13. It says, "Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and in gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel." Listen to this word. "To the place where his tent had been," where? Interesting. "Between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar," what's the phrase? "At the first. And there Abram called upon the name of his Lord." Do you see what God does there? God doesn't just rebuke you and kick you off into the darkness and say, "I don't care about you." God does not throw away people. God is the God, number 4, of second chances. He says, "Hey, you got off the track? You got off the trail? You left the journey? You went wandering off into some stupid thing? Come back to the trail." God walks Abram all the way back to where he should have been from the beginning. And he's like, "Hey, buddy, let's try again." And what does Abram do? He builds an altar, just like he did at the beginning. He went back home and realized, you know what? This isn't the end. This is just the beginning. Yeah, I screwed up. I really messed up. I should have never gone to Egypt. I should have never did what I did. I should have never lied and deceived. But you know what? I did do those things. And God humbled me. And you know what God wants me to do now? Don't stay in the darkness beating yourself. "Oh, I'm a horrible sinner. I better stay away from God now because look at what I do." The sad thing is when I talk to people who think that's somehow noble, it's noble because you screwed up to stay away from God. It's not noble. It's shameful and cowardly. God wants you to come out of the shadows back to where you started on the path and then try again. Start walking again. Do it again. Oh, so now you can't look on your life and say, "Well, I didn't do it perfectly." Well, guess what? Nobody does it perfectly. This isn't about being perfect. This is about walking with God. And if he humbles you, but he brings you back and he says, "Start walking again. Don't give up. Don't run away. Don't hide in the shadows because you're ashamed." Shame has no place in a relationship with God. Shame brings you to a point of humble humility. And then God wants you to go back to where you started. Go back to the beginning. Go back to where it was good. Go back to there and start over. Try again. Pick something different next time. I was one of these kids. I love choose your own adventure books. Have you guys remember those books?
You read along, and it says, if you jump in the hole, turn to page 15. If you punch the guy in the face, turn to page 17. And you're like, ooh, I have choices. And so, like, you figure out, and one of them maybe leads you, like, to being shot in the head by a bad guy, right? And you're like, ooh. And then what would you do as a kid? You back up to where you were, and be like, well, I don't want that one. So you pick the other one, and then you're like, yay, I picked the right choice, and everything's great. Life sometimes is like that. You made a dumb choice. Sometimes God takes you right back to that and says, hey, make a different choice this time. It'll turn out differently if you make a different choice. So who is God? God is the God who is always faithful to us, no matter how unfaithful we are to him. He's also a God of grace. He gives you gifts you don't deserve and have never deserved. But he also knows how to humble your pride. And please hold on to this. Don't ever let go of this. He is the God of second chances. Failure does never have to be final. Failure is not final if you go back and you start over. So, two questions as I close. When you look inside your heart and you're actually honest with yourself, and it's hard to do that sometimes, but I encourage you to try it from time to time. It's good for you. When you look in the mirror and ask yourself this question, am I in survival mode right now? Have I taken back control of my life and come up with some kind of a plan to get what I need to make it through the crisis without really having to lean on God? If you've done that and you're in survival mode right now, can I ask you what you've sacrificed to get there? And second question is, are you willing to go back? How about it? You willing to go back? Are you willing to be humbled and to turn back to God and try again? Friends, God is in this for the long haul. He will not quit on you. So don't you dare quit on him or on yourself. It's what it's all about. Let's pray. God, I pray that you would take these words, and if anybody needed to hear them specifically because they're in survival mode or they're contemplating going into survival mode, I pray you would stop them from making that choice and help them to stay where they are and wait for you to come through for them. But Lord, if they've already gone out there, help them to have the courage to be humbled by you and then brought back to the beginning and to try again and start over. Thank you for Abram's story and how it encourages us and reminds us that you never give up on us. Help us to never give up on you or give up on ourselves either. And I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to invite my new friend Angela and her awesome daughter head back out to our gym right now and go get settled by the table there. And I encourage the rest of you, give her about 30 seconds to get back there and say hi and finish those conversations I interrupted so rudely earlier. And Lord bless you. We will see you next Sunday, 9:30 for ABF and Sunday school and 10:45 for church. Lord bless you. You're dismissed.